The Well of Ascension, Book 2 of Mistborn, by Brandon Sanderson. Dedication. For Phyllis Call, who may never understand my fantasy books, yet who taught me more about life, and therefore writing, than she can probably ever know. Thanks, Grandma. Part 1. Heir of the Survivor.
I write these words in steel, for anything not set in metal cannot be trusted.
1. The army crept like a dark stain across the horizon. King Elland Venture stood motionless upon the Luthadel city wall, looking out at the enemy troops. Around him, ash fell from the sky in fat, lazy flakes. It wasn't the burnt, white ash that one saw in dead coals. This was a deeper, harsher black ash. The ash mounts had been particularly active lately. Elland felt the ash dust his face and clothing, but he ignored it. In the distance, the bloody red sun was close to setting. It backlit the army that had come to take Elland's kingdom from him.
"How many?" Elland asked quietly.
50,000, we think," Ham said, leaning against the parapet, beefy arms folded on the stone. Like everything in the city, the wall had been stained black by countless years of ashfalls.
50,000 soldiers, Elland said, trailing off.
Despite heavy recruitment, Elland barely had 20,000 men under his command, and they were peasants with less than a year of training. Maintaining even that small number was straining his resources. If they'd been able to find the Lord Ruler's Atium, perhaps things would be different. As it was, Elland's rule was in serious danger of economic disaster.
"What do you think?" Elland asked.
"I don't know, El," Ham said quietly. "Kelsier was always the one with the vision."
"But you helped him plan," Elland said.
"You and the others, you were his crew.
You were the ones who came up with a strategy for overthrowing the Empire, then made it happen."
Ham fell silent, and Elland felt as if he knew what the man was thinking. Kelsier was central to it all. He was the one who organized, the one who took all of the wild brainstorming and turned it into a viable operation. He was the leader, the genius. And he'd died a year before on the very same day that the people, as part of his secret plan, had risen up in fury to overthrow their god emperor. Elland had taken the throne in the ensuing chaos. Now it was looking more and more like he would lose everything that Kelsier and his crew had worked so hard to accomplish. Lose it to a tyrant who might be even worse than the Lord Ruler. A petty, devious bully in noble form. The man who had marched his army on Luthadel. Elland's own father, Straff Venture.
"Any chance you can talk him out of attacking?" Ham asked.
"Maybe," Elland said hesitantly. "Assuming the Assembly doesn't just surrender the city."
"They close?"
"I don't know, honestly. I worry that they are. That army has frightened them, Ham."
And with good reason, he thought.
"Anyway, I have a proposal for the meeting in 2 days. I'll try to talk them out of doing anything rash. Doxin got back today, right?"
Ham nodded.
"Just before the army's advance."
"I think we should call a meeting of the crew," Elland said. "See if we can come up with a way out of this."
"We'll still be pretty short-handed," Ham said, rubbing his chin. "Spook isn't supposed to be back for another week, and the Lord Ruler only knows where Breeze went. We haven't had a message from him in months."
Elland sighed, shaking his head.
"I can't think of anything else, Ham."
He turned, staring out over the ashen landscape again. The army was lighting campfires as the sun set. Soon the mists would appear.
"I need to get back to the palace and work on that proposal," Elland thought.
"Where'd Vin run off to?"
Ham asked, turning back to Elland. Elland paused.
"You know," he said, "I'm not sure."
Vin landed softly on the damp cobblestones, watching as the mists began to form around her. They puffed into existence as darkness fell, growing like tangles of translucent vines, twisting and wrapping around one another. The great city of Luthadel was still. Even now, a year after the Lord Ruler's death and the rise of Ellen's new free government, the common people stayed in their homes at night. They feared the mists, a tradition that went far deeper than the Lord Ruler's laws. Vin slipped forward quietly, senses alert. Inside herself, as always, she burned tin and pewter. Tin enhanced her senses, making it easier for her to see in the night. Pewter made her body stronger, made her lighter on her feet. These, along with copper, which had the power to hide her use of allomancy from others who were burning bronze, were metals that she left on almost all the time. Some called her paranoid. She thought herself prepared. Either way, the habit had saved her life on numerous occasions. She approached a quiet street corner and paused, peeking out. She'd never really understood how she burned metals. She could remember doing it for as long as she'd been alive, using allomancy instinctively even before she was formally trained by Kelsier. It didn't really matter to her. She wasn't like Elend. She didn't need a logical explanation for everything. For Vin, it was enough that when she swallowed bits of metal, she was able to draw upon their power. Power she appreciated, for she well knew what it was like to lack it. Even now, she was not what one would likely envision as a warrior. Slight of frame and barely 5 feet tall, with dark hair and pale skin, she knew she had an almost frail look about her. She no longer displayed the underfed look she had during her childhood on the streets, but she certainly wasn't someone any man would find intimidating. She liked that. It gave her an edge, and she needed every edge she could get. She also liked the night. During the day, Luthadel was cramped and confining despite its size. But at night, the mists fell like a deep cloud. They dampened, softened, shaded. Massive keeps became shadowed mountains, and crowded tenements melted together like a chandler's rejected wares. Vin crouched beside her building, still watching the intersection. Carefully, she reached within herself and burned steel, one of the other metals she'd swallowed earlier. Immediately, a group of translucent blue lines sprang up around her. Visible only to her eyes, the lines pointed from her chest to nearby sources of metal. All metals, no matter what type. The thickness of the lines was proportionate to the size of the metal pieces they met. Some pointed to bronze door latches, others to crude iron nails holding boards together. She waited silently. None of the lines moved. Burning steel was an easy way to tell if someone was moving nearby. If they were wearing bits of metal, they would trail telltale moving lines of blue. Of course, that wasn't the main purpose of steel. Vin reached her hand carefully into her pouch belt and pulled out one of the many coins that sat within, muffled by cloth batting. Like all other bits of metal, this coin had a blue line extending from its center to Vin's chest. She flipped the coin into the air, then mentally grabbed its line and, burning steel, pushed on the coin. The bit of metal shot into the air, arcing through the mists, forced away by the push. It plinked to the ground in the middle of the street. The mists continued to spin. They were thick and mysterious, even to Vin. More dense than a simple fog and more constant than any normal weather pattern, they churned and flowed, making rivulets around her. Her eyes could pierce them. Tin made her sight more keen. The night seemed lighter to her, the mists less thick. Yet they were still there. A shadow moved in the city square, responding to her coin, which she had pushed out into the square as a signal. Vin crept forward and recognized Orsur the Chandra. He wore a different body than he had a year ago, during the days when he had acted the part of Lord Renu. Yet his balding, nondescript body had now become just as familiar to Vin. Orsur met up with her.
"Did you find what you were looking for, mistress?"
he asked, tone respectful, yet somehow still a little hostile. As always. Vin shook her head, glancing around in the darkness.
"Maybe I was wrong," she said. "Maybe I wasn't being followed."
The acknowledgement made her a bit sad. She'd been looking forward to sparring with the Watcher again tonight. She still didn't even know who he was. The first night she'd mistaken him for an assassin. And maybe he was. Yet he seemed to display very little interest in Elland, and a whole lot of interest in Vin.
"We should go back to the wall," Vin decided, standing up. "Elland will be wondering where I went."
Orsir nodded. At that moment, a burst of coins shot through the mists, spraying toward Vin.
"I have begun to wonder if I am the only sane man left. Can the others not see? They have been waiting so long for their hero to come, the one spoken of in Terra's prophecies, that they quickly jump between conclusions, presuming that each story and legend applies to this one man."
2. Vin reacted immediately, springing away. She moved with incredible speed, tasseled cloak swirling as she skittered across the wet cobblestones. The coins hit the ground behind her, throwing up chips of stone, then leaving trails in the mist as they ricocheted away.
"Orsir, go!"
she snapped, though he was already fleeing toward a nearby alleyway. Vin spun into a low crouch, hands and feet on the cool stones, alimentic metals flaring in her stomach. She burned steel, watching the translucent blue lines appear around her. She waited, tense, watching for... Another group of coins shot from the dark mists, each one trailing a blue line. Vin immediately flared steel and pushed against the coins, deflecting them out into the darkness. The night fell still again. The street around her was wide, for Luthadel, though tenements rose high on either side. Mist spun lazily, making the ends of the street disappear into a haze. A group of 8 men appeared from the mists and approached. Vin smiled. She had been right. Someone was following her. These men weren't, however, the Watcher. They didn't have his solid grace, his sense of power. These men were something far more blunt. Assassins. It made sense. If she had just arrived with an army to conquer Luthadel, the first thing she'd have done was send in a group of Allomancers to kill Elland. She felt a sudden pressure at her side, and she cursed as she was thrown off balance, her coin pouch jerking away from her waist. She ripped its string free, letting the enemy Allomancer push the coins away from her. The assassins had at least one coin shot, a misting who had the power to burn steel and push on metals. In fact, 2 of the assassins trailed blue lines pointing to coin pouches of their own. Vin considered returning the favor and pushing their pouches away, but hesitated. No need to play her hand yet. She might need those coins. Without coins of her own, she couldn't attack from a distance. However, if this was a good team, then attacking from a distance would be pointless. Their coin shots and lurchers would be ready to deal with shot coins. Fleeing wasn't an option either. These men hadn't come for her alone. If she fled, they'd continue on to their real goal. Nobody sent assassins to kill bodyguards. Assassins killed important men. Men like Elland Venture, king of the Central Dominance. The man she loved. Vin flared pewter, body growing tense, alert, dangerous. 4 thugs at the front, she thought, eyeing the advancing men. The pewter burners would be inhumanly strong, capable of surviving a great deal of physical punishment. Very dangerous up close. And the one carrying the wooden shield is a lurcher. She fainted forward, causing the approaching thugs to jump backward. 8 mistings against 1 mistborn was decent odds for them, but only if they were careful. The 2 coin shots moved up the sides of the street so that they'd be able to push at her from both directions. The last man, standing quietly beside the lurcher, had to be a smoker. Relatively unimportant in a fight, his purpose was to hide his team from enemy allomancers.
8 mistings. Kelsier could have done it. He'd killed an Inquisitor. She wasn't Kelsier, however. She had yet to decide if that was a bad or a good thing.
Vin took a deep breath, wishing she had a bit of atium to spare, and burned iron. This let her pull on a nearby coin, one of those that had been shot at her, much as steel would have let her push on it. She caught it, dropped it, then jumped, making as if to push on the coin and shoot herself into the air. One of the coin shots, however, pushed against the coin, shooting it away. Since allomancy would only let a person push directly away from or pull directly toward their body, Vin was left without a decent anchor. Pushing against the coin would only shoot her sideways. She dropped back to the ground.
"Let them think they have me trapped," she thought, crouching in the center of the street. The thugs approached a little more confidently.
"Yes," Vin thought. "I know what you're thinking. This is the Mistborn who killed the Lord Ruler? This scrawny thing? Can it be possible? I wonder the same thing myself."
The first thug ducked in to attack, and Vin burst into motion. Obsidian daggers flashed in the night as she ripped them free from their sheaths, and blood sprayed black in the darkness as she ducked beneath the thug's staff and slashed her weapons across his thighs. The man cried out. The night was no longer silent. Men cursed as Vin jumped through them. The thug's partner attacked her, blurringly fast, his muscles fueled by pewter. His staff whipped a tassel from Vin's mist cloak as she threw herself to the ground, then pushed herself back up out of a third thug's reach. A spray of coins flew toward her. Vin reached out and pushed on them. The coin shot, however, continued to push, and Vin's push smashed against his. Pushing and pulling metals was all about weight, and, with the coins between them, that meant Vin's weight was slammed against the assassin's weight. Both were tossed backward. Vin shot out of a thug's reach, the coin shot fell to the ground. A flurry of coins came at her from the other direction. Still tumbling in the air, Vin flared steel, giving herself an extra burst of power. Blue lines were a jumbled mess, but she didn't need to isolate the coins to push them all away. This coin shot let go of his missiles as soon as he felt Vin's touch. The bits of metal scattered out into the mists. Vin hit the cobblestone's shoulder first. She rolled, flaring pewter to enhance her balance, and flipped to her feet. At the same time, she burned iron and pulled hard on the disappearing coins. They shot back toward her. As soon as they got close, Vin jumped to the side and pushed them toward the approaching thugs. The coins, however, immediately veered away, twisting through the mists toward the lurcher. He was unable to push the coins away. Like all mistings, he only had one allomantic power, and his was to pull with iron. He did this effectively, protecting the thugs. He raised his shield and grunted from the impact as the coins hit it and bounced away. Vin was already moving again. She ran directly for the now exposed coin shot to her left, the one who had fallen to the ground. The man yelped in surprise, and the other coin shot tried to distract Vin, but he was too slow. The coin shot died with a dagger in his chest. He was no thug. He couldn't burn pewter to enhance his body. Vin pulled out her dagger, then yanked his pouch free. He gurgled quietly and collapsed back to the stones.
1, Vin thought, spinning, sweat flying from her brow.
She now faced 7 men down the corridor-like street. They probably expected her to flee. Instead, she charged. As she got close to the thugs, she jumped, then threw down the pouch she'd taken from the dying man. The remaining coin shot cried out, immediately pushing it away. Vin, however, got some lift from the coins, throwing herself in a leap directly over the heads of the thugs. One of them, the wounded one, had unfortunately been smart enough to remain behind to protect the coin shot. The thug raised his cudgel as Vin landed. She ducked his first attack, raised her dagger, and a blue line danced into her vision. Quick! Vin reacted immediately, twisting and pushing against a door latch to throw herself out of the way. She hit the ground on her side, then flung herself up with one hand. She landed skidding on mist-wetted feet. A coin hit the ground behind her, bouncing against the cobbles. It hadn't come close to hitting her. In fact, it had seemed aimed at the remaining assassin coin shot. He'd probably been forced to push it away. But who had fired it? Or sir? Vin wondered. But that was foolish. The Chondra was no allomancer, and besides, he wouldn't have taken the initiative. Orser did only what he was expressly told. The assassin coin shot looked equally confused. Vin glanced up, flaring tin, and was rewarded with the sight of a man standing atop a nearby building. A dark silhouette. He didn't even bother to hide.
It's him, she thought. The Watcher.
The Watcher remained atop his perch, offering no further interference, as the thugs rushed Vin. She cursed as she found three staves coming at her at once. She ducked one, spun around the other, then planted a dagger in the chest of the man holding the third. He stumbled backward but didn't drop. Pewter kept him on his feet.
Why did the Watcher interfere? Vin thought as she jumped away. Why would he shoot that coin at a coin shot who could obviously push it away?
Her preoccupation with the Watcher nearly cost her her life, as an unnoticed thug charged her from the side. It was the man whose legs she'd slashed. Vin reacted just in time to dodge his blow. This, however, put her into range of the other three. All attacked at once. She actually managed to twist out of the way of two of the strikes. One, however, crashed into her side. The powerful blow tossed her across the street, and she collided with a shop's wooden door. She heard a crack. From the door, fortunately, and not her bones, and she slumped to the ground, daggers lost. A normal person would be dead. Her pewter-strengthened body, however, was tougher than that. She gasped for breath, forcing herself up to her feet and flared tin. The metal enhanced her senses, including her sense of pain, and the sudden shock cleared her mind. Her side ached where she'd been struck, but she couldn't stop. Not with the thug charging her, swinging his staff in an overhead blow. Crouching before the doorway, Vin flared pewter and caught the staff in both hands. She growled, pulling back her left hand, then cracking her fist against the weapon, shattering the fine hardwood in a single blow. The thug stumbled, and Vin smashed her half of the staff across his eyes. Though dazed, he stayed on his feet.
"Can't fight the thugs," she thought. "I have to keep moving."
She dashed to the side, ignoring her pain. The thugs tried to follow, but she was lighter, thinner, and, much more important, faster. She circled them, coming back toward the coin shot, smoker, and lurcher. A wounded thug had again retreated to protect these men. As Vin approached, the coin shot threw a double handful of coins at her. Vin pushed the coins away, then reached out and pulled on the ones in the bag at the man's waist. The coin shot grunted as the bag whipped toward Vin. It was tied by a short tether to his waist, and the pull of her weight jerked him forward. The thug grabbed him and steadied him. And since her anchor couldn't move, Vin was instead pulled toward it. She flared her iron, flying through the air, raising a fist. The coin shot cried out, and he pulled a tie to free the bag. Too late. Vin's momentum carried her forward, and she drove her fist into the coin shot's cheek as she passed. His head spun around, neck snapping. As Vin landed, she brought her elbow up into the surprised thug's chin, tossing him backward. Her foot followed, crashing against the thug's neck. Neither rose. That was three down. The discarded coin pouch fell to the ground, breaking and throwing 100 sparkling bits of copper across the cobblestones around Vin. She ignored the throbbing in her elbow and faced down the lurcher. He stood with his shield, looking strangely unworried. A crack sounded behind her. Vin cried out, her tin-enhanced ears overreacting to the sudden sound. Pain shot through her head, and she raised her hands to her ears. She'd forgotten the smoker, who stood holding two lengths of wood, crafted to make sharp noises when pounded together. Movements and reactions, actions and consequences. These were the essence of allomancy. Tin made her eyes pierce the mists, giving her an edge over the assassins. However, the tin also made her ears extremely acute. The smoker raised his sticks again. Vin growled and yanked a handful of coins off the cobblestones, then shot them at the smoker. The lurcher, of course, pulled them toward him instead. They hit the shield and bounced free, and as they sprayed into the air, Vin carefully pulled one so it fell behind him. The man lowered his shield, unaware of the coin Vin had manipulated. Vin pulled, whipping the single coin directly toward her, and into the back of the lurcher's chest. He fell without a sound.
Four.
All fell still. The thugs running toward her drew to a stop, and the smoker lowered his sticks. They had no coin shots and no lurchers, nobody that could push or pull metal, and Vin stood amid a field of coins. If she used them, even the thugs would fall quickly. All she had to do was... Another coin shot through the air, fired from the watcher's rooftop. Vin cursed, ducking. The coin, however, didn't strike her. It took the stick-holding smoker directly in the forehead. The man toppled backward, dead.
What?
Vin thought, staring at the dead man. The thugs charged, but Vin retreated, frowning.
Why kill the smoker? He wasn't a threat anymore.
Unless... Vin extinguished her copper, then burned bronze, the metal that let her sense when other allomancers were using powers nearby. She couldn't feel the thugs burning pewter. They were still being smoked, their allomancy hidden. Someone else was burning copper. Suddenly it all made sense. It made sense that the group would risk attacking a full Mistborn. It made sense that the Watcher had fired at the coin shot. It made sense that he had killed the smoker. Vin was in grave danger. She only had a moment to make her decision. She did so on a hunch, but she'd grown up on the streets, a thief and a scam artist. Hunches felt more natural to her than logic ever would.
"Or sir," she yelled, "go for the palace!"
It was a code, of course. Vin jumped back, momentarily ignoring the thugs as her servant ducked out of an alleyway. He pulled something off of his belt and whipped it toward Vin. A small glass vial, the kind that allomancers use to store metal shavings. Vin quickly pulled the vial to her hand. A short distance away, the second coin shot, who had lain there as if dead, now cursed and scrambled to his feet. Vin spun, drinking the vial with a quick gulp. It contained only a single bead of metal. Atium. She couldn't risk carrying it on her own body, couldn't risk having it pulled away from her during a fight. She'd ordered Ursir to remain close this night, ready to give her the vial in an emergency. The coin shot pulled a hidden glass dagger from his waist, charging at Vin ahead of the thugs, who were getting close. Vin paused for just a moment, regretting her decision but seeing its inevitability. The men had hidden a Mistborn among their numbers. A Mistborn like Vin, a person who could burn all 10 metals. A Mistborn who had been waiting for the right moment to strike at her, to catch her unprepared. He would have Atium, and there was only one way to fight someone who had Atium. It was the ultimate allomantic metal, usable only by full Mistborn, and he could easily decide the fate of a battle. Each bead was worth a fortune. But what good was a fortune if she died? Vin burned her Atium. The world around her seemed to change. Every moving object, swinging shutters, blowing ash, attacking thugs, even trails of mist, shot out a translucent replica of itself. These replicas moved just in front of their real counterparts, showing Vin exactly what would happen a few moments in the future. Only the Mistborn was immune. Rather than shooting out a single Atium shadow, he released dozens, the sign that he was burning Atium. He paused just briefly. Vin's own body would have just exploded with dozens of confusing Atium shadows. Now that she could see the future, she could see what he was going to do. That in turn changed what she was going to do. That changed what he was going to do. And so, like the reflections in two mirrors facing each other, the possibilities continued into infinity. Neither had an advantage. Though their Mistborn paused, the four unfortunate thugs continued to charge, having no way to know that Vin burned Atium. Vin turned, standing beside the body of the fallen smoker. With one foot, she kicked the sound sticks into the air. A thug arrived, swinging. His diaphanous Atium shadow of a staff blow passed through her body. Vin twisted, ducking to the side, and could feel the real staff pass over her ear. The maneuver seemed easy within the aura of Atium. She snatched one of the sound sticks from the air, then slammed it up into the thug's neck. She spun, catching the other sound stick, then twisted back and cracked it against the man's skull. He fell forward, groaning, and Bin spun again, easily dodging between two more staves. She smashed the noise sticks against the sides of a second thug's head. They shattered, ringing with a hollow sound like that of a musician's beat, as the thug's skull cracked. He fell and did not move again. Bin kicked his staff into the air, then dropped the broken sound sticks and caught it. She spun, twisting the staff and tripping both remaining thugs at once. In a fluid motion, she delivered two swift yet powerful blows to their faces. She fell to a crouch as the men died, holding the staff in one hand, her other hand resting against the mist-wetted cobbles. The Mistborn held back, and she could see uncertainty in his eyes. Power didn't necessarily mean competence, and his two best advantages, surprise and Atium, had been negated. He turned, pulling a group of coins up off the ground, then shot them. Not toward Vin, but toward Orsur, who still stood in the mouth of an alleyway. The Mistborn obviously hoped that Vin's concern for her servant would draw her attention away, perhaps letting him escape. He was wrong. Vin ignored the coins, dashing forward. Even as Orsur cried out in pain, a dozen coins piercing his skin, Vin threw her staff at the Mistborn's head. Once it left her fingers, however, its Atium shadow became firm and singular. The Mistborn assassin ducked, dodging perfectly. The move distracted him long enough for her to close the distance, however. She needed to attack quickly. The Atium bead she'd swallowed had been small. It would burn out quickly. And once it was gone, she'd be exposed, and her opponent would have total power over her. Her terrified opponent raised his dagger. At that moment, his Atium ran out. Vin's predatory instincts reacted instantly, and she swung a fist. He raised an arm to block her blow, but she saw it coming, and she changed the direction of her attack. The blow took him square in the face. Then, with deft fingers, she snatched his glass dagger before it could fall and shatter. She stood and swung it through her opponent's neck. He fell quietly. Bin stood, breathing heavily, the group of assassins dead around her. For just a moment, she felt overwhelming power. With Atium, she was invincible. She could dodge any blow, kill any enemy. Her Atium ran out. Suddenly, everything seemed to grow dull. The pain in her side returned to her mind, and she coughed, groaning. She'd have bruises, large ones, perhaps some cracked ribs. But she'd won again. Barely. What would happen when she failed? When she didn't watch carefully enough or fight skillfully enough? Elend would die. Vin sighed and looked up. He was still there, watching her from atop a roof. Despite a half-dozen chases spread across several months, she'd never managed to catch him. Someday she would corner him in the night. But not today. She didn't have the energy. In fact, a part of her worried that he'd strike her down. But, she thought, he saved me. I would have died if I'd gotten too close to that hidden Mistborn. An instant of him burning Atium with me unaware, and I'd have found his daggers in my chest. The Watcher stood for a few more moments, wreathed, as always, in the curling mists. Then he turned, jumping away into the night. Vin let him go. She had to deal with Orsur. She stumbled over to him, then paused. His nondescript body, in a servant's trousers and shirt, had been pelted with coins and blood seeped from the several wounds. He looked up at her.
What?
He asked.
I didn't expect there to be blood.
Orsur snorted.
You probably didn't expect me to feel pain, either.
Vin opened her mouth, then paused. Actually, she hadn't ever thought about it. Then she hardened herself.
What right does this thing have to chastise me?
Still, Orsur had proven useful.
Thank you for throwing me the vial, she said. It was my duty, mistress,
Orsur said, grunting as he pulled his broken body up against the side of the alleyway.
I was charged with your protection by Master Kelsier.
As always, I serve the contract.
Ah, yes, the mighty contract.
Can you walk?
Only with effort, mistress. The coins shattered several of these bones. I will need a new body. One of the assassins, perhaps?
Vin frowned. She glanced back toward the dead men, and her stomach twisted slightly at the gruesome sight of their fallen bodies. She'd killed them, 8 men, with the cruel efficiency that Kelsier had trained in her. This is what I am, she thought. A killer, like those men. That was how it had to be. Someone had to protect Elend. However, the thought of Orsure eating one of them, digesting the corpse, letting his strange chondra senses memorize the positioning of muscles, skin, and organs, so that he could reproduce them, sickened her. She glanced to the side and saw the veiled scorn in Orsure's eyes. They both knew what she thought of him eating human bodies. They both knew what he thought of her prejudice.
No, Vin said. We won't use one of these men.
You'll have to find me another body, then, Orsure said. The contract states that I cannot be forced to kill men.
Vin's stomach twisted again. I'll think of something, she thought. His current body was that of a murderer taken after an execution. Vin was still worried that someone in the city would recognize the face.
Can you get back to the palace? Vin asked.
With time, Orsure said.
Vin nodded, dismissing him, then turned back toward the bodies. Somehow she suspected that this night would mark a distinct turning point in the fate of the Central Dominance. Straff's assassins had done more damage than they would ever know. That bead of Atium had been her last. The next time a Mistborn attacked her, she would be exposed, and would likely die as easily as the Mistborn she'd slain this night.
My brethren ignore the other facts. They cannot connect the other strange things that are happening. They are deaf to my objections, and blind to my discoveries.
3. Elend dropped his pen to his desk with a sigh, then leaned back in his chair and rubbed his forehead. Elend figured that he knew as much about political theory as any living man. He'd certainly read more about economics, studied more about governments, and held more political debates than anyone he knew. He understood all the theories about how to make a nation stable and fair, and had tried to implement those in his new kingdom. He just hadn't realized how incredibly frustrating a parliamentary council would be. He stood up and walked over to get himself some chilled wine. He paused, however, as he glanced out his balcony doors. In the distance, a glowing haze shone through the mists. The campfires of his father's army. He put down the wine. He was already exhausted, and the alcohol probably wouldn't help. I can't afford to fall asleep until I get this done, he thought, forcing himself to return to his seat. The assembly would meet soon, and he needed to have the proposal finished tonight. Elend picked up the sheet, scanning its contents. His handwriting looked cramped, even to him, and the page was scattered with crossed-out lines and notations, reflections of his frustration. They'd known about the army's approach for weeks now, and the assembly still quibbled about what to do. Some of its members wanted to offer a peace treaty. Others thought they should simply surrender the city. Still others felt they should attack without delay. Ellen feared that the surrender faction was gaining strength, hence his proposal. The motion, if passed, would buy him more time. As king, he already had prime right of parley with a foreign dictator. The proposal would forbid the assembly from doing anything rash until he'd at least met with his father. Ellen sighed again, dropping the sheet. The assembly was only 24 men, but getting them to agree on anything was almost more challenging than any of the problems they argued about. Elend turned, looking past the solitary lamp on his desk, out through the open balcony doors and toward the fires. Overhead, he heard feet scuttling on the rooftop. Vin, going about her nightly rounds. Elland smiled fondly, but not even thinking of Vin could restore his good temper.
That group of assassins she fought tonight. Can I use that somehow?
Perhaps if he made the attack public, the assembly would be reminded of the disdain Straff had for human life, and then be less likely to surrender the city to him. But perhaps they'd also get frightened that he'd send assassins after them, and be more likely to surrender. Sometimes Elland wondered if the Lord Ruler had been right. Not in oppressing the people, of course, but in retaining all of the power for himself. The final empire had been nothing if not stable. It had lasted 1,000 years, weathering rebellions, maintaining a strong hold on the world.
The Lord Ruler was immortal, though, Elland thought. That's an advantage I'll certainly never have.
The assembly was a better way. By giving the people a parliament with real legal authority, Elland would craft a stable government. The people would have a king, a man to provide continuity, a symbol of unity, a man who wouldn't be tainted by the need to get reappointed. However, they would also have an assembly, a council made up of their peers that could voice their concerns. It all sounded wonderful in theory, assuming they survived the next few months. Elland rubbed his eyes, then dipped his pen and began to scratch new sentences at the bottom of the document. The Lord Ruler was dead. Even a year later, Vin sometimes found that concept difficult to grasp. The Lord Ruler had been everything. King and God, lawmaker and ultimate authority. He had been eternal and absolute. And now he was dead. Vin had killed him. Of course, the truth wasn't as impressive as the stories. It hadn't been heroic strength or mystical power that had led Vin to defeat the Emperor. She'd just figured out the trick that he'd been using to make himself immortal, and she'd fortunately, almost accidentally, exploited his weakness. She wasn't brave or clever, just lucky. Vin sighed. Her bruises still throbbed, but she had suffered far worse. She sat atop the palace, once Keep Venture, just above Ellen's balcony. Her reputation might have been unearned, but it had helped keep Ellen alive. Though dozens of warlords squabbled in the land that had once been the final empire, none of them had marched on Luthadel. Until now. Fires burned outside the city. Straff would soon know that his assassins had failed. What then? Assault the city? Hammond Clubs warned that Luthadel couldn't hold against a determined attack. Straff had to know that. Still, for the moment, Elland was safe. Vin had gotten pretty good at finding and killing assassins. Barely a month passed that she didn't catch someone trying to sneak into the palace. Many were just spies, and very few were allomancers. However, a normal man's steel knife would kill Elland just as easily as an allomancer's glass one. She wouldn't let that occur. Whatever else happened, whatever sacrifices it required, Elland had to stay alive. Suddenly apprehensive, she slipped over to the skylight to check on him. Elland sat safely at his desk below, scribbling away on some new proposal or edict. Kingship had changed the man remarkably little. About 4 years her senior, placing him in his early 20s, Elland was a man who put great stock in learning, but little in appearance. He only bothered to comb his hair when he attended an important function, and he somehow managed to wear even well-tailored outfits with an air of dishevelment. He was probably the best man she had ever known. Earnest, determined, clever, and caring. And for some reason, he loved her. At times, that fact was even more amazing to her than her part in the Lord Ruler's death. Vin looked up, glancing back at the army lights. Then she looked to the sides. The Watcher had not returned. Often on nights like this, he would tempt her, coming dangerously close to Ellen's room before disappearing into the city.
Of course, if he'd wanted to kill Elland, he could have just done it while I was fighting the others.
It was a disquieting thought. Vin couldn't watch Elend every moment. He was exposed a frightening amount of the time. True, Elend had other bodyguards, and some were even Allomancers. They, however, were stretched as thin as she was. This night's assassins had been the most skilled and most dangerous that she had ever faced. She shivered, thinking about the Mistborn who had hid among them. He hadn't been very good, but he wouldn't have needed much skill to burn Atium, then strike Vin directly in the right place. The shifting mists continued to spin. The army's presence whispered a disturbing truth. The surrounding warlords were beginning to consolidate their domains, and were thinking about expansion. Even if Luthadel stood against Straff somehow, others would come. Quietly, Vin closed her eyes and burned bronze, still worried that the Watcher, or some other Allomancer, might be nearby, planning to attack Elend in the supposedly safe aftermath of the assassination attempt. Most Mistborn considered bronze to be a relatively useless metal, as it was easily negated. With copper, a Mistborn could mask their Allomancy, not to mention protect themselves from emotional manipulation by zinc or brass. Most Mistborn considered it foolish not to have their copper on at all times. And yet, Vin had the ability to pierce copper clouds. A copper cloud wasn't a visible thing. It was far more vague. A pocket of deadened air where Allomancers could burn their metals and not worry that bronze burners would be able to sense them. But Vin could sense Allomancers who used metals inside of a copper cloud. She still wasn't certain why. Even Kelsier, the most powerful Allomancer she had known, hadn't been able to pierce a copper cloud. Tonight, however, she sensed nothing. With a sigh, she opened her eyes. Her strange power was confusing, but it wasn't unique to her. Marsh had confirmed that steel inquisitors could pierce copper clouds, and she was certain that the Lord Ruler had been able to do so. But why her? Why could Vin, a girl who barely had 2 years' training as a Mistborn, do it? There was more. She still remembered vividly the morning when she'd fought the Lord Ruler. There was something about that event that she hadn't told anyone, partially because it made her fear, just a bit, that the rumors and legends about her were true. Somehow, she'd drawn upon the mists, using them to fuel her Allomancy instead of metals. It was only with that power, the power of the mists, that she had been able to beat the Lord Ruler in the end. She liked to tell herself that she had simply been lucky in figuring out the Lord Ruler's tricks. But there had been something strange that night, something that she'd done, something that she shouldn't have been able to do, and had never been able to repeat. Vin shook her head. There was so much they didn't know, and not just about Allomancy. She and the other leaders of Elend's fledgling kingdom tried their best, but without Kelsier to guide them, Vin felt blind. Plans, successes, and even goals were like shadowy figures in the mist, formless and indistinct. "You shouldn't have left us, Kel," she thought. "You saved the world, but you should have been able to do it without dying." Kelsier, the survivor of Hath-Sin, the man who had conceived and implemented the collapse of the Final Empire. Vin had known him, worked with him, been trained by him. He was a legend and a hero. Yet he had also been a man, fallible, imperfect. It was easy for the Ska to revere him, then blame Elend and the others for the dire situation that Kelsier had created. The thought left her feeling bitter. Thinking about Kelsier often did that. Perhaps it was the sense of abandonment, or perhaps it was just the uncomfortable knowledge that Kelsier, like Vin herself, didn't fully live up to his reputation. Vin sighed, closing her eyes, still burning bronze. The evening's fight had taken a lot out of her, and she was beginning to dread the hours she still intended to spend watching. It would be difficult to remain alert when... She sensed something. Vin snapped her eyes open, flaring her tin. She spun and stooped against the rooftop to obscure her profile. There was someone out there, burning metal. Bronze pulses thumped weakly, faint, almost unnoticeable, like someone playing drums very quietly. They were muffled by a copper cloud. The person, whoever it was, thought that their copper would hide them. So far, Vin hadn't left anyone alive, save Elland and Marsh, who knew of her strange power. Vin crept forward, fingers and toes chilled by the roof's copper sheeting. She tried to determine the direction of the pulses. Something was odd about them. She had trouble distinguishing the metals her enemy was burning. Was that the quick beating thump of pewter? Or was it the rhythm of iron? The pulses seemed indistinct, like ripples in a thick mud. They were coming from somewhere very close, on the rooftop, just in front of her. Vin froze, crouching, the night breezes blowing a wall of mist across her. Where was he? Her senses argued with each other. Her bronze said there was something right in front of her, but her eyes refused to agree. She studied the dark mists, glanced upward just to be certain, then stood. This is the first time my bronze has been wrong, she thought with a frown. Then she saw it. Not something in the mists, but something of the mists. The figure stood a few feet away, easy to miss, for its shape was only faintly outlined by the mist. Vin gasped, stepping backward. The figure continued to stand where it was. She couldn't tell much about it. Its features were cloudy and vague, outlined by the chaotic churnings of wind-blown mist. If not for the form's persistence, she could have dismissed it, like the shape of an animal seen briefly in the clouds. But it stayed. Each new curl of the mist added definition to its thin body and long head. Haphazard, yet persistent. It suggested a human, but it lacked the Watcher's solidity. It felt, looked, wrong. The figure took a step forward. Vin reacted instantly, throwing up a handful of coins and pushing them through the air. The bits of metal zipped through the mist, trailing streaks, and passed right through the shadowy figure. It stood for a moment. Then it simply puffed away, dissipating into the mist's random curls. Elland wrote the final line with a flair, though he knew he'd simply have a scribe rewrite the proposal. Still, he was proud. He thought that he'd be able to work out an agreement that would finally convince the Assembly that they could not simply surrender to Straff. He glanced unconsciously toward a stack of papers on his desk. On their top sat an innocent-seeming yellow letter, still folded, blood-like smudge of wax broken at the seal. The letter had been short. Elland remembered its words easily. Son, I trust you've enjoyed seeing after venture interests in Luthadel. I have secured the northern dominance, and will shortly be returning to our keep in Luthadel. You may turn over control of the city to me at that time. King Straff Venture. Of all the warlords and despots that had afflicted the final empire since the Lord Ruler's death, Straff was the most dangerous. Elland knew this firsthand. His father was a true imperial nobleman. He saw life as a competition between lords to see who could earn the greatest reputation. He had played the game well, making House Venture the most powerful of the pre-collapse noble families. Elland's father would not see the Lord Ruler's death as a tragedy or a victory, just as an opportunity. The fact that Straff's supposedly weak-willed fool of a son now claimed to be king of the Central Dominance probably gave him no end of mirth. Elland shook his head, turning back to the proposal. A few more rereads, a few tweaks, and I'll finally be able to get some sleep. A cloaked form dropped from the skylight in the roof and landed with a quiet thump behind him. Elland raised an eyebrow, turning toward the crouching figure. You know, I leave the balcony open for a reason, Vin. You could come in that way if you wanted.
I know, Vin said.
Then she darted across the room, moving with an allomancer's unnatural litheness. She checked beneath his bed, then moved over to his closet and threw open the doors. She jumped back with the tension of an alert animal, but apparently found nothing inside that met with her disapproval, for she moved over to peek through the door leading into the rest of Ellen's chambers. Ellen watched her with fondness. It had taken him some time to get used to Vin's particular idiosyncrasies. He teased her about being paranoid. She just claimed she was careful. Regardless, half the time she visited his chambers, she checked underneath his bed and in his closet. The other times, she held herself back, but Ellen often caught her glancing distrustfully toward potential hiding places. She was far less jumpy when she didn't have particular reason to worry about him. However, Ellen was only just beginning to understand that there was a very complex person hiding behind the face he had once known as Valette Renews. He had fallen in love with her courtly side without ever knowing the nervous, furtive Mistborn side. It was still a little difficult to see them as the same person. Vin closed the door, then paused briefly, watching him with her round, dark eyes. Ellen found himself smiling. Despite her oddities, or more likely because of them, he loved this thin woman with the determined eyes and blunt temperament. She was like no one he had ever known, a woman of simple yet honest beauty and wit. She did, however, sometimes worry him. "Vin," he asked, standing, "have you seen anything strange tonight?" Ellen paused.
"Besides you?"
She frowned, striding across the room. Ellen watched her small form, clothed in black trousers and a man's buttoning shirt, mist cloak tassels trailing behind her. She wore the cloak's hood down, as usual, and she stepped with a supple grace, the unconscious elegance of a person burning pewter.
"Focus," he told himself. "You really are getting tired."
"Vin, what's wrong?"
Vin glanced toward the balcony. "That Mistborn, the Watcher, is in the city again."
"You're sure?" Vin nodded.
"But I don't think he's going to come for you tonight."
Ellen frowned. The balcony doors were still open and trails of mist puffed through them, creeping along the floor until they finally evaporated. Beyond those doors was darkness. Chaos. "It's just mist," he told himself. "Water vapor. Nothing to fear."
"What makes you think the Mistborn won't come for me?"
Vin shrugged.
"I just feel he won't."
She often answered that way. Vin had grown up a creature of the streets, and she trusted her instincts. Oddly, so did Ellen. He eyed her, reading the uncertainty in her posture. Something else had unsettled her this night. He looked into her eyes, holding them for a moment until she glanced away.
"What?"
he asked.
"I saw something else," she said. "Or I thought I did. Something in the mist, like a person formed from smoke. I could feel it, too, with allomancy. It disappeared, though."
Ellen frowned more deeply. He walked forward, putting his arms around her.
"Vin, you're pushing yourself too hard. You can't keep prowling the city at night and then staying up all day. Even allomancers need rest."
She nodded quietly. In his arms, she didn't seem to him like the powerful warrior who had slain the Lord Ruler. She felt like a woman past the edge of fatigue, a woman overwhelmed by events. A woman who probably felt a lot like Ellen did. She let him hold her. At first, there was a slight stiffness to her posture. It was as if a piece of her still expected to be hurt, a primal sliver that couldn't understand that it was possible to be touched out of love rather than anger. Then, however, she relaxed. Ellen was one of the few she could do that around. When she held him, really held him, she clung with a desperation that bordered on terror. Somehow, despite her powerful skill as an allomancer and her stubborn determination, Vin was frighteningly vulnerable. She seemed to need Ellen. For that, he felt lucky. Frustrated at times, but lucky. Vin and he hadn't discussed his marriage proposal and her refusal, though Ellen often thought of the encounter.
"Women are difficult enough to understand," he thought. and I had to go and pick the oddest one of the lot. Still, he couldn't really complain. She loved him. He could deal with her idiosyncrasies. Vin sighed, then looked up at him, finally relaxing as he leaned down to kiss her. He held it for a long moment, and she sighed. After the kiss, she rested her head on his shoulder.
"We do have another problem," she said quietly. "I used the last of the Atium tonight."
"Fighting the assassins?" Vin nodded.
"Well, we knew it would happen eventually. Our stockpile couldn't last forever."
"Stockpile?" Vin asked. "Kelsier only left us 6 beads.
Ellen sighed, then pulled her tight.
His new government was supposed to have inherited the Lord Ruler's Atium reserves, a supposed cache of the metal comprising an amazing treasure. Kelsier had counted on his new kingdom holding those riches. He had died expecting it. There was only one problem. Nobody had ever found the reserve. They had found some small bit, the Atium that had made up the bracers that the Lord Ruler had used as a ferrochemical battery to store up age. However, they had spent those on supplies for the city, and they had actually contained only a very small bit of Atium. Nothing like the cache was said to have had. There should still be, somewhere in the city, a wealth of Atium thousands of times larger than those bracers.
"We'll just have to deal with it," Ellen said.
"If a Mistborn attacks you, I won't be able to kill him."
"Only if he has Atium," Ellen said. "It's becoming more and more rare. I doubt the other kings have much of it."
Kelsier had destroyed the pits of Hath-Sin, the only place where Atium could be mined. Still, if Vin did have to fight someone with Atium...
"Don't think about that," he told himself. "Just keep searching. Perhaps we can buy some. Or maybe we'll find the Lord Ruler's cache. If it even exists."
Vin looked up at him, reading the concern in his eyes, and he knew she had arrived at the same conclusions as he. There was little that could be accomplished at the moment. Vin had done well to conserve their Atium as long as she had. Still, as Vin stepped back and let Elland return to his table, he couldn't help thinking about how they could have spent that Atium. His people would need food for the winter.
"But by selling the metal," he thought, sitting, "we would have put more of the world's most dangerous allomantic weapon into the hands of our enemies."
Better that Vin used it up. As he began to work again, Vin poked her head over his shoulder, obscuring his lamplight.
"What is it?" she asked.
"The proposal blocking the assembly until I've had my right of parley."
"Again?"
she asked, cocking her head and squinting as she tried to make out his handwriting.
"The assembly rejected the last version."
Vin frowned.
"Why don't you just tell them that they have to accept it? You're the king."
"Now see," Ellen said, "that's what I'm trying to prove by all this. I'm just one man, Vin. Maybe my opinion isn't better than theirs. If we all work on the proposal together, it will come out better than if one man had done it himself."
Vin shook her head.
"It will be too weak. No teeth. You should trust yourself more."
"It's not about trust. It's about what's right. We spent 1,000 years fighting off the Lord Ruler. If I do things the same way he did, then what will be the difference?"
Vin turned and looked him in the eyes.
"The Lord Ruler was an evil man. You're a good one. That's the difference."
Ellen smiled.
"It's that easy for you, isn't it?"
Vin nodded. Ellen leaned up and kissed her again.
"Well, some of us have to make things a little more complicated, so you'll have to humor us. Now kindly remove yourself from my light so I can get back to work."
She snorted, but stood up and rounded the desk, leaving behind a faint scent of perfume. Ellen frowned.
"When'd she put that on?"
Many of her motions were so quick that he missed them. "Perfume. Just another of the apparent contradictions that made up the woman who called herself Vin. She wouldn't have been wearing it out in the mists. She usually put it on just for him. Vin liked to be unobtrusive, but she loved wearing scents, and got annoyed at him if he didn't notice when she was trying out a new one.
She seemed suspicious and paranoid, yet she trusted her friends with a dogmatic loyalty. She went out at night in black and gray, trying so hard to hide. But Ellen had seen her at the balls a year ago, and she had looked natural in gowns and dresses. For some reason, she had stopped wearing those. She hadn't ever explained why. Ellen shook his head, turning back to his proposal. Next to Vin, politics seemed simplistic. She rested her arms on the desktop, watching him work, yawning. "You should get some rest," he said, dipping his pen again. Vin paused, then nodded. She removed her mist cloak, wrapped it around herself, then curled up on the rug beside his desk. Ellen paused. "I didn't mean here, Vin," he said with amusement.
"There's still a Mistborn out there somewhere," she said with a tired, muffled voice. "I'm not leaving you."
She twisted in the cloak, and Ellen caught a brief grimace of pain on her face. She was favoring her left side. She didn't often tell him the details of her fights. She didn't want to worry him. It didn't help. Ellen pushed down his concern and forced himself to start reading again. He was almost finished. Just a bit more, and a knock came at his door. Ellen turned with frustration, wondering at this new interruption. Ham poked his head in the doorway a second later. "Ham," Ellen said. "You're still awake?"
"Unfortunately," Ham said, stepping into the room.
"Madra's going to kill you for working late again," Ellen said, setting down his pen. Complain though he might about some of Vin's quirks, at least she shared Ellen's nocturnal habits. Ham just rolled his eyes at the comment. He still wore his standard vest and trousers. He'd agreed to be the captain of Ellen's guard on a single condition, that he would never have to wear a uniform. Vin cracked an eye as Ham wandered into the room, then relaxed again.
"Regardless," Ellen said, "to what do I owe the visit? I thought you might want to know that we identified those assassins who tried to kill Vin."
Ellen nodded.
"Probably men I know."
Most Allomancers were noblemen, and he was familiar with all of those in Straff's retinue.
"Actually, I doubt it," Ham said. "They were Westerners."
Ellen paused, frowning, and Vin perked up.
"You're sure?"
Ham nodded.
"Makes it a bit unlikely that your father sent them, unless he's done some heavy recruiting in Fadrick City. They were of houses Gardra and Conrad, mostly."
Ellen sat back. His father was based in Urto, hereditary home of the Venture family. Fadrix was halfway across the Empire from Urto, several months' worth of travel. The chances were slim that his father would have access to a group of Western Allomancers.
"Have you ever heard of Ashweather Set?"
Ham asked. Ellen nodded.
"One of the men who set himself up as king in the Western Dominance. I don't know much about him."
Vin frowned, sitting.
"You think he sent these?"
Ham nodded.
"They must have been waiting for a chance to slip into the city, and the traffic at the gates these last few days would have provided the opportunity. That makes the arrival of Straff's army and the attack on Vin's life something of a coincidence."
Ellen glanced at Vin. She met his eyes, and he could tell that she wasn't completely convinced that Straff hadn't sent the assassins. Ellen, however, wasn't so skeptical. Pretty much every tyrant in the area had tried to take him out at one point or another. Why not Set?
"It's that Atium," Ellen thought with frustration.
He'd never found the Lord Ruler's cache, but that didn't stop the despots in the Empire from assuming he was hiding it somewhere.
"Well, at least your father didn't send the assassins," Ham said, ever the optimist.
Ellen shook his head.
"Our relationship wouldn't stop him, Ham, trust me." "He's your father," Ham said, looking troubled.
"Things like that don't matter to Straff. He probably hasn't sent assassins because he doesn't think I'm worth the trouble. If we last long enough, though, he will." Ham shook his head.
"I've heard of sons killing their fathers to take their place. But fathers killing their sons? I wonder what that says about old Strap's mind, that he'd be willing to kill you. You think that...
Ham? Elland interrupted.
Hmm?
You know, I'm usually good for a discussion, but I don't really have time for philosophy right now.
Oh, right.
Ham smiled wanly, standing and moving to go.
I should get back to Mardra anyway.
Elland nodded, rubbing his forehead and picking up his pen yet again.
Make sure you gather the crew for a meeting. We need to organize our allies, Ham. If we don't come up with something incredibly clever, this kingdom may be doomed.
Ham turned back, still smiling.
You make it sound so desperate, El.
Elland looked over at him.
The assembly is a mess. A half-dozen warlords with superior armies are breathing down my neck. Barely a month passes without someone sending assassins to kill me, and the woman I love is slowly driving me insane.
Vin snorted at this last part.
Oh, is that all? Ham said. See? It's not so bad after all. I mean, we could be facing an immortal god and his all-powerful priests instead.
Elland paused, then chuckled despite himself.
Good night, Ham, he said, turning back to his proposal. Good night, Your Majesty.
Perhaps they are right. Perhaps I am mad, or jealous, or simply daft. My name is Quan, philosopher, scholar, traitor. I am the one who discovered Alendi, and I am the one who first proclaimed him to be the hero of ages. I am the one who started this all.
4.
The body showed no overt wounds. It still lay where it had fallen. The other villagers had been afraid to move it. Its arms and legs were twisted in awkward positions, the dirt around it scuffed from pre-death thrashings.